Hotcast One is brought to you in partnership with Speak Studios and Speak Spokane, presented by Delish Hamburgers. Speak Spokane is a community-driven studio space where voices from all walks of life can speak and be heard. You can find them on Instagram and Facebook at Speak Studios, Speak Spokane, and at their website, speakpodcasting.com. Speak Studios, speak and be heard. TheGameBag.com. Have you been out to an early morning soccer game or football game and it was either wet or raining during the game? Were you afraid of taking your blanket in fear it would get muddy or wet? Go to thegamebag.com to pick up the world's best stadium bag. The Game Bag is waterproof, windproof, because of the vinyl exterior. It protects from not only the mud and rain, the lost hot dog covered in ketchup and mustard, or your favorite sports drink. The interior is a soft, medium weight fleece designed to create a greater level of warmth, comfort, and security for any outdoor activity. It's also machine washable. Go to www.thegamebag.com to get yours today.
Shut up and sit down.
Welcome to the Hotcast One Radio Podcast. I am your host, the number three hitter, the Big Lamboski, Kevin Lammerding. Mr. Albert Garza is not at the Palatial Palace on the South Hill, Spokane. He is on assignment, we'll call it. Not here today. I just got done recording with a college teammate of mine, amazing third baseman that we had, a gamer. Jordan Blondell, head coach of the Edmonton Prospects. I don't know how many hats he wears. General manager of the Prospects, as well as Evolution Sports Excellence. He's involved with them as well. I'll tag the websites to all of that. Edmonton Prospects is a collegiate summer league for, you know, 50 games in 70 days. It's more swings, more games, more competition. When you're done playing your college season and you want to keep playing, look for the Edmonton Prospects or that league and go up to Canada, experience some travel. Jordan is a great guy. Just from the conversation, it sounds like he has matured a lot from when we played ball together, but we were all young and dumb back then. So it was good to talk to him, hear about the team, hear about what he's been doing, hearing about the new facility that they're going to be building in Spruce Grove. So I'm excited for him. I hope you enjoy that. Remember, download the show, subscribe to the Spotify or the Apple Podcast, the Google Podcast, however you listen to the show, hit that subscribe button and then download the show. Speak Spokane, speak and be heard. Look up them. They're on Facebook. They're on Instagram. Check out the other shows. There's a bunch of other shows. Mark Rippon has a show. We Hotcast One has a show. And we're on Instagram. We're on Facebook. Like our stuff. Comment on all the stuff. Again, download the show. Albert really needs you to download the show. But I hope you enjoyed the show. Jordan Blondell, third baseman, University of Jamestown. He was a teammate of mine. We talk about our time under Coach Hager, talk about Coach Hager, and then we talk about the 2004 Jimmy baseball team. Went to the World Series. They're in the Jimmy Hall of Fame. An amazing team. An amazing team. The band of brothers, all of my friends, all of my teammates. I was not a part of it because I aged out, but they were still there, and everything came together in 2004. So we talk about that. Without further ado, I give you Jordan Blondell.
That's cool. I've done one game. I've done color for one game at the WNBL level at the time. It's a WCBL now. I was in the booth with another team's radio guy. It was fun. They did a little color. Threw some stories in there. It was a good time.
Outstanding. That sounds like a good time. So yeah. I was just doing some, you know, some research on my boy JB here, And what did you do after you left Jamestown?
I went and played that summer of 04 in Victoria, played in, basically what's the West Coast League now. There's a team in Victoria. It's kind of like a independent collegiate team. And we played some of the WCBL teams and then some West Coast League teams at the same time, kind of split the schedule up. And then from there, came back home. For a semester, I was done. I graduated, but then I went back down to Jamestown and coached. Rhode Island, I met some people and got to know some people and whatnot, and then I was coaching in Jamestown. Tom had recruited some players from the island. You know a couple of them, Wally and Millward.
Oh, yep.
Talbot, and then subsequently, after you had gone, after I had gone, there were some other island guys. So there was a bit of a connection there. I was working in the office, man. I was a full-blown assistant coach to Jimmy's and recruiting and making calls. And part of what that was, getting into Canada. And, one call led to another. And they were looking for a head guy at Vancouver Island University, is what it's called now. It's the school that Millie and Wally played at. Back then it was called Malaspina. And talked to their baseball guy there, and they were looking for a guy. They were looking for a guy to take over fall of 05. So, yeah, one thing kind of led to another, and then all of a sudden I was in Nanaimo at Malaspina University College running the college baseball program when I was 24 years old. So I went out there, and I did 12 years out there, and then eventually things kind of morphed. The school went through a facelift and changed over to Vancouver Island University. And the programming up here for sports is a little different. So we were still a club team. There's a club, and then there's, sports that are tied into the school. And part of what I did was, create the pathway for it to become part of the school. So at one point it was called Vancouver Island Baseball Institute. That was the name for a few years. And through negotiations and discussions, we ended up becoming Vancouver Island Baseball, Vancouver Island University Baseball, and that's what it's called today. And my assistant coach in my last year, I gave him the reins. He took over the reins, and he's been running the program ever since. I left there in for fall 2017, so I wasn't back. So spring 17 was my last season, and I went out there in 05. So I did 12 seasons. And then came back to Edmonton, and I'm in Edmonton now, man. I have been involved in a couple of different organizations at player development, youth level, an academy, and then some private stuff. And through that, I've also been employed by the Edmonton Prospects of the Western Canadian Baseball League. So that's I wear a couple different hats, but with the Edmonton Prospects of the WCBL, Western Canadian Baseball League, I'm the assistant GM. And the on-field manager, so the head coach. And, I can kind of boil that down to baseball operations are in my office. I take care of all that kind of stuff. I work with my boss on that, but pretty much have free reign to do what we need to do. And, he's been involved in the franchise since 2007. So he knows what needs to be done, and he knows that I can handle it. So I pretty much just let him know what we're doing, and we go ahead and do it. And then as far as the other role I have as the assistant GM, there's a lot of business involved in the sport of baseball, man. And you know that because you're kind of becoming a little bit more involved with podcasting and potentially getting involved with the Spokane Indians, selling tickets, making sure that you have the right hot dogs. What kind of meat are you using for the burgers? Because we ran our food and beverage operation as well. And
okay.
I don't want to overstep and say that I was involved in all those decisions, but that's what goes on in the off season. It's all those things that are not baseball related, not player related, ticket packs, what kind of marketing strategy do we have? Who are we going to target? How much money are we going to allocate to social media versus radio and TV and all those kind of things? So, it's pretty fun, man. I'm fortunate. I'm grateful that I get to be involved in really all sides of the game, the business side, the non-baseball side of the baseball business. And then, you know, obviously with being the assistant GM and, you know, kind of director of player operations and, you know, really the GM of baseball operations, recruiting, road trips, you know, when's the bus going to leave? You know, what kind of players are we looking for? Housing, all that stuff. And then on the side, you know, everybody get a little side hustle. I do a lot of player development I've been involved with a couple of different avenues as far as that's concerned, but I just started up kind of my own thing. It's called Evolution Baseball.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now.
It's tied in with the sports store in Leduc. Leduc's a suburb of Edmonton, you know, about 40,000
people. I've been there.
Edmonton's about a... Oh, good. So you know.
Leduc.
You know, have you been to the sports store there?
No. I've been to the paper that was there, the Leduc Tribune or Leduc Times or whatever it is.
Okay. Well, I was going to say, if you're in Leduc, man, you are back. You better get to the sports store because they got a hit tracks machine with the cage and you can drop some bombs in the cage next time you're up here, man.
It looks like a very nice facility. I'm looking at the pictures right now and it looks nice, dude.
Well, that's the sports store. It is a nice facility. Honestly, it's a bit small. It's just one cage with the hit tracks. Evolution Baseball, we've centered around youth, obviously, and younger youth, you know, getting into the 8 to 11 and then 11 to 13, and really just introducing them to all the little drills and having fun and moving their feet and all that kind of stuff. And with Evolution Baseball, we've partnered with Athics. It's a sports performance center in the city of Edmonton, and their facility is legit, dude. So I don't know which picture you're looking at, but whenever anybody looks at the picture of Athics, A-T-H-X, like, dang, dude, that's a sweet facility. And so that may be what you're looking at. And so we
I'm
do a bunch of our training of our guys there.
I'm on the Evolution Sports Excellence Facebook page. So I'm in this Facebook page looking at all these photos, and I see the one cage, I see the hit tracks, I see all the ball, I see all the gloves, the glove wall there. Yeah. So it looks like a nice facility.
Yeah, dude, that sports store is sweet. So if anybody down your way, man, if you guys can't find what you're looking for, consider Evolution Sports. The owner operator there is a friend of mine. He loves baseball, man. He wants to be the baseball store up here. I think he is already. You know, there's competition, but he's really focused on capturing the baseball, softball, slow pitch market. And, you know, he's invested in that glove wall, dude. It's one of a kind for up here. And all the bats you can find, you know, he's making a catching wall. I'll send you a picture when he's finished. He's going to be the one-stop shop for anybody that's a catcher. I guess you could say Northern Alberta up here. You know, there's Northern Alberta, Central Alberta, and Southern Alberta. So if you're a catcher, there's a good chance you're going to be buying your gear from Evolution Sports because that's what he wants to do, and he's investing in it. So it's kind of a cool setup, dude. Yeah, pre-pandemic, you know, different things are happening now with rules and restrictions. I'm just doing one-on-ones and two-on-ones, but yeah, you know, we'd run up to four kids in the cage at once there, get the tees out and work on some specific stuff with the kids and you know, get the hit tracks machine going after that and work on situational hitting and, you know, where do we want to hit the baseball and what are we working on, front toss and BP. So we get a lot done in the small space, which I know that you are very familiar with as a baseball
guy. Very small space.
We've got to be the best at finding ways to get things done with like nothing.
Yeah. So we share our hitting facility. Our hitting facility here that we use for our men's league, we share with Little League and some other individual training. So we have one. We have the big cage at where we're at. So if we need to throw bullpens, we can do that in there. But it's about, you know, 80 feet, and we utilize that whole thing in that one little small area. So that's, trying to get the most out of it with everybody that's there. We might have, you know, 8, 9, 10 guys there, and we only have an hour. We have 80 feet to use. So let's use the most of it that we can.
Yeah, exactly. And that's college baseball. That's baseball to a T. You know, not everyone has the biggest and best facility and so much space they don't even know what to do with. You know, more often than not, it's, you got one cage, you got an hour, you got 10 guys, figure it out. And you always inevitably do and find ways to get better. So it's pretty cool.
You've been back to J-Town and seen their facility that they have now?
Yes, I have.
Jeez.
Yeah, dude. They're laughing, man. Like, remember we had the 55-foot cage with the spotlights and,
yep.
You know, maybe not enough room for the catcher even at that distance. And you're facing live guys.
But yep. That's the way. You're dude, leaning honestly, up against the wall. Me,
yeah, and when I became an upperclassman my junior, senior year, that cage was obviously a challenge at any point. Like, if you hit live in that cage, you know, in our era, and you came out of that era hitting, like, 100 in your at-bats off pitchers there, like, you're a potential Hall of Famer, you know? It was so stacked against hitters to get any good piece, any good piece of a barrel in there. So, yeah, what they get to do, what they get to use now is amazing. I'm super happy for them. You know, I love the way that program is growing, man. You know, that's a second home for me still, dude. So I'm pumped for them. You know, a little part of me jealous. You know, obviously their facility's way better than it used to be, but that's a good thing.
Very, yeah. No, and then going back to the cage that we hit in, you know, we didn't. So going back to that cage, you know, it was dark, and for us to really get our swings in, we had to focus harder on the pitcher, where the ball was coming from, watching the ball all the way through the darkness almost into the hitting zone to hit. Once we got down to Kansas, once we got down to Missouri, the Metrodome even, that ball looked like a bright orb coming at us, and we could see the ball well. I think it was a benefit to us in some instances.
Dude, for me personally, I don't know how everyone is. For me personally, you know, when I matured into the player that I wanted to be there, like my upperclassmen, it made me better, man. It was tunnel vision. It was super focused, like you say. And then when you get out on the field, the challenge is not thinking too big, because now you've got all this area to look at, but maintaining that tunnel vision on a live arm in a game right off the hop. And I know my junior and senior years, I came out of the gate flying both years, and you're right, it was easier to hit all of a sudden. And what a great training tool when you make hitting even harder than it normally is, and then you get into season, it's like, oh, this is easier.
Right. One thing I brought to my team from us our college days was the flat bat. Do you utilize that at all in your coaching?
Yeah, we do. You know, I do all sorts of different ages, so, you know, it's strategic when we bring it out. You know, what I've been doing a ton more of lately has been top hand, bottom hand. We do have some, actually two really nice flat bats that we use, and I'll break those in, and then I'll pivot from that to a top hand, bottom hand with mini bats, and really try and emphasize, you know, what the movement pattern we're trying to learn. And then I'll flip back into a flat bat. You know what, like my first 2 years at Jamestown, I despised the flat bat and, you know, I was hard headed and stubborn and, you know, I wasn't good at it. So it was easy to discount it. And dude, that was a huge tool for me to be able to stay through the baseball. And it ended up becoming my favorite drill, which is crazy to think of. And I remember like, man, I hate this drill. What is this going to do? And then I used to use it all the time as I grew into, you know, my last 2 years there, and the bat path, you know, the quality of contact. It was a huge tool for me. And so for sure, a long answer to your question. Yeah, dude, we use that with our young guys. And it's, you know, it's the opportunity to teach them what the point of the drill is and, you know, allow them to fail and tell them that this is all right, man. Like nobody's going to absolutely dominate the flat bat the first time they use it. You know, this is something that gives you an opportunity to get better at. And that's what we're trying to do. So my guys have bought into it. My younger guys kind of, when I say that, you know, 16U, 14U, they bought into it when we do it. So it's cool to see them work through that progression.
What are the ages of your players there for the Edmonton prospects?
So our collegiate team is just that. You know, we'll go freshmen right up to seniors. So if you've the eligibility in the league allows seniors to play out their last summer. And my team will be mixed, dude. We've got some true freshmen. We've got what they call now COVID freshmen. So there's a whole new class of players now because of COVID. But we'll have a couple true freshmen. We'll have a couple of COVID freshmen that really didn't get an opportunity last year when everything got shut down. And, you know, it's important for me, in my opinion, our team has some veterans and some leadership. So we'll have a couple of seniors that this will be their get a.
Oops. I've become really good at editing, so don't worry about all this. I'll edit all that out.
You know what? a quick story there is like I really feel like my ear canals are not situated properly for headphones.
Okay.
And it's like they always kind of work themselves out of my ear, so I push them back in and I keep hitting the wrong gotcha. Part of the headphone. So my bad, dude.
No, you're good.
Yeah, getting back to the roster, I think it's important for us to have veterans and older players. It is an older player league. Those are the guys that you know, they've been through the wars. You know, they nothing fazes them. They're able to overcome adversity a little bit better than younger players. And I don't want to just have an older team. You know, I want to have that young blood in there and that go-getter and that, like, the enthusiasm of their first experience versus the end of their experience. And so as far as I'm concerned, a good mix of different graduating classes is kind of what we do. That's our recipe. We're excited about the team we've recruited. Lambeau, man, like I've got this kid from Benedictine Mesa. So that's a ranked NAI program out of Phoenix. I had this kid in 2019 and we were going to have him in 2020. We didn't play a season last summer. And so I've got the opportunity to get him back, for one more summer. 5-tool player, just to speak on his baseball ability, you know, he is a top three, top five MVP candidate. Now, in my mind, he was the MVP of the league. You know, well, that'll go up to debate amongst everyone, but he performed all summer. And then on the other side of it, and what is really important, especially for us, because of the location and the amount of kids that we're around, you know, it's a big city. There's quite a bit of eyes on us in the baseball community. This kid was just awesome. This young man was just awesome, you know, dealing with kids and interacting with the kids. And honestly, to a man, our whole squad in 2019 did just a superb job of connecting with youth. You could just see that kids gravitated towards our dugout. You know, it's not the big league, so there's quite a bit of access, and we allow as much as we can. You know, there is a point in time where it's like we got to let the players be players and have some separation. But whenever possible, the kids are around our guys. And Trav, this player's name is Travis Hunt. Trav was just awesome with those guys. And so we're really pumped to have him back. He's a middle order bat, righty. Dude, he's a 5-tool. Like, he'd be similar to Krause.
Okay.
Absolutely blazing speed, big-time arms. You know, he's 90-plus from the outfield, power. Base stealing ability, dude. He stole 30 bags in our league. That's one thing that, man, if you ever got a chance to see our team play, I recruit speed. I recruit guys that play the game fast. And we had 155 stolen bases in 56 games.
Wow.
In 2019.
That's a
and
big
we,
number.
We expect, dude, it was super fun. Like we run whenever. Like there's different counts. You know, there's the book on when you should run, which, you know, we're not going to do things that are reckless, but there's also some nuance in the book of rules of baseball. And we look to expose opportunities. And frankly, if there's 90 feet to be had, we're going to try and take it. And, you know, the only thing that will prevent us from doing that is the score being out of hand. But thankfully for our philosophy is this league's so tight that most games are, you know, within 3 runs in the seventh inning, like pretty much every game. You know, you get your couple outliers, but everything is tight all the time. So we always have opportunities to run, and he was the catalyst for us. So yeah, like I said, I'm really pumped about this team that we have recruited. He's the leader of the team, but you know, we've got 28 other guys that I'm excited to have with us. And then, you know, I want to talk about real quick. I had a kid from Moses Lake. So that's out kind of by your neck of the woods.
Yep. Hour and a half away.
In 2019, I had a pitcher, from Moses Lake. He played at, Yakima for a bit and then went to College of Idaho. He had pitched in the West Coast League. We got him, for his senior summer. So his last year of eligibility, his name's Hunter Boyd.
Okay.
Hunter Boyd was and is one of my favorite people I've ever been around in the game. Outside of the fact that he was our number one ace on the bump, the guy you give the ball to when you need something, and he performed as such, dude. He's going to answer the bell and give you what you need. So if you need to throw a shutout, he'll do that. You know, if you need him to keep you in a game midseason and he's logging a bunch of innings, he'll give you an opportunity to win that game. Hunter Boyd, Moses Lake, I wanted to get that out there. Just a first-class human, and then that, you know, leads to kind of what I was talking about, how our guys were so awesome with the kids in this community. Hunter was part of that, dude. He would play catch with kids, like where we were at in the stadium. He'd be throwing balls up from the field level up into the stands, you know, kind of pregame, just after BP, before all the fans really rolling in, kids that were there early. You'd be playing catch with them in the stands, man. You just see the look on their face. And I can relate to that. I remember what it was like for me when I was 10, 12 years old. For me, it was in the sport of hockey. I was around some high school hockey players when I lived out east in Eastern Canada. And, you know, I'm 40 years old and I still talk about that experience, you know, when I was 10, 11, 12. So awesome, awesome person. And down in your neck of the woods. So I'm glad I got a chance to drop a Hunter Boyd in there.
Yeah, I'll have to definitely look him up and see what the kid's about. So
he's working his way into law enforcement down there. So yeah, he's a community leader.
Okay. So will you kind of give give a subtitle of what your guys' team is about and what the league is about? Because from what I'm hearing, it sounds like it's an awesome summer league for college players to come up, and it just gives them another opportunity to get looked at.
Yeah, totally. So the Western Canadian Baseball League, it's been around for decades. It's been in some different forms, but the current form, you know, has really been functioning since the late 90s. There's 7 teams in Alberta. There's 4 teams in Saskatchewan. So we use both provinces. Lots of fan support. We average 2,000 fans a game. We were second in the league. There's a team in just south of Calgary that's putting up about 4,000 people a game. And you know, if you look up any summer collegiate attendance numbers, you know, they're in the top 3, 5, 7. Every year, we were like 15 or 16 with about 2,000 a game. Other parks, other locations aren't quite as big as our 2 centers, but they're putting in 1,200, 1,500, 1,800, 1,000, depending on the weather and the day. So the fan support in our league is really awesome. And that is kind of what our league is all these communities have this baseball team that, you know, in the summer they want to see a rivalry. So, and, you know, the players come and go. They're from all over the world, you know, mostly North America, but we get guys from Japan and Puerto Rico and everywhere. The players change every year, but the franchises don't. So, you know, when Edmonton goes into Lethbridge, you know, that's the thing. You know, people have grown up in these communities, you know, generations, and the rivalries in hockey and the rivalries in baseball and football. So you get that a little bit. You know, when the Alberta teams go out to Saskatchewan, well, the Saskatchewan fans, they don't want Alberta to win. So there's always that kind of energy in the crowd, I'll say. Yeah, for sure. So there's rivalries, you know, community rivalries, which is great. the league produces pro players. You know, we're in the top end of summer collegiate baseball. You know, there's probably 70 leagues going. You know, our league would be in the top percentile there. You know, we're not the best league. You know, there's a couple leagues that, you know, would be ranked ahead of us, but, you know, we're in that 4 to 7 range pretty comfortably. And as far as experience is concerned for the players, you know, we'd be right up there.
Okay.
Guys, you know, they may have never left the state of Texas or Florida or wherever they're from. You know, they may have never left that state. You know, for the most part, most of them have never been to Canada. So when they come up here, you know, it's, you know, they're international, they're traveling, they need their passport, they come up here. And, you know, for yourself, like if somebody had come to you and said, hey, you want to come up to Edmonton, you know, back when you were 18, 19, 20 years old, you'd, well, where is that? What's the deal there? What's going on? And then, and you know, you become aware of what the city is. You maybe do a little research and, oh, shoot, you know, man, maybe these Canadians can play baseball up there. And when the guys come up here, man, you know, our league has a lot of retained players. Let the guys come back for a second and third year because they just have a great time and a great experience. And, you know, Frank, honestly, Lambeau, for us, it is about the player experience. You know, we want to win the whole thing. We want to win the game tonight. You know, there's no doubt about that. But we want our guys to have a great time too and enjoy this city. It's about 1 million people. It's a special place in the summer, man. It's nice weather. You know, the River Valley in Edmonton is bigger than Central Park is in New York.
Edmonton is
beautiful. There's just really cool things. Yeah, dude, and it really is. So, in 2019, I'd be doing the shuttles to the airport, grabbing guys and then driving down and kind of giving them the guided tour as we're coming in the city. And one of the comments was from one of the guys, like, man, it's really green here. And we haven't even got in the River Valley yet.
Expecting cool. Ice?
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, depending on where you're from, you know, you maybe not see a lot of grass or trees like by major roads. And, you know, we have that here. So it was a unique perspective for me to have a player, you know, that's down from Tennessee, you know, make that comment that, you know, this is really beautiful. Like, it's really green here. And then we go into the River Valley where the ballpark was, and it's all green down there, and it really is beautiful. So, and now outside of that, like how we take care of the players, you know, providing them with housing and meal money on the roads, you know, we're a professional organization in that sense. You know, the players are still amateur, but we run a professional organization. So those guys having a great time and saying good things about us is what this is all about. And we've had success doing that. And honestly, all the franchises in our league are like-minded. You know, we'll compete on the field. You know, we'll compete in the boardroom when we're trying to grow the league and bounce ideas off each other. But I'll tell you what, the camaraderie of everyone's mission to continue to improve this league to a T, a little baseball pun there, to a T, everyone in this league, all the franchises, I would say are on the same page. You know, we all have some little slight differences in what we want, but there is so much common ground amongst all the franchises and the governors that, you know, this league is just going to continue to grow and continue to provide that experience for the players. So, it's a dogfight every night, Kev. It's close games. It's a battle. And you know what? You have ups and downs. It's 56 games in, you know, however many days, well, you know, 70 days. Like, there's not a ton of days off. You're playing every night. The plan is really you play six games a week, basically, is what it is. And
sounds like a short A, you know, short A minor league schedule almost.
It totally is, man. And there's travel, there's buses. And for me personally, you know, I don't think anyone ever, yeah, I love an 8-hour bus ride. I mean, nobody loves that, but I love it. You know, you get on the road with the fellas, you're going down somewhere to play three games in another ballpark. And, you know, you got some movies going, you got the classic Red Deer stop. I'm sure you've been through their gasoline alley. There's a couple of food spots that
we can
stop at on the road. There you go, man. Like Pete's Drive-In down there. And for me, it's like I get guys from California, and I love an In-N-Out burger. We don't have that up here. So when we're going through gasoline alley, I'm like, hey, man, you guys got to check out our In-N-Out burger called Pete's Drive-In. You got to try their double cheeseburger and whatnot. So you know, all those kind of stories, man, you know what it is. Like, you're on the road with strangers at the start of the year, and then, the players, I hope that they become brothers.
You know,
that a bunch of them will end up staying in touch with each other as they grow older and reminisce about the experience. But, it's our opportunity to have 20 guys waiting in a burger joint to get some burgers because we got to kill a half hour. And, somebody says something funny or there's a discussion on fantasy baseball or there's a discussion about this or that or the next thing. And, that's that baseball family, man. And I love that. I don't love leaving the ballpark at 11 o'clock at night and driving through the night and getting back at 8 a.m. I mean, nobody loves that, but I gladly do that for the experiences I get to have and be part of a competition and get to, hopefully make more right decisions than wrong decisions in the course of a game and put our guys in the best position to win a ball game that night and then experience their happiness, man. You know what the difference is when you win a game versus you lose a game, the tone in the clubhouse, it's just different.
Yep.
The music's busting and guys are laughing versus everybody sitting in their stall quiet and that sucks. Let's get out of here and get ready to go tomorrow kind of thing. So that's what you're fighting for. And I still love being a part of that fight. I have a blast, man, when I see success, when I see my guys have success. So
I can hear the excitement in your voice just talking about it because you're feeding off of their emotions and their experiences and bringing it onto yourself. And I can hear the joy and the excitement in your voice just telling me.
Yeah, dude. And you know what? Like, my role is not to get too high, so I'll poker face that. But inside, I got the little kid jumping up and down. But my role is different now, as a player, nobody would ever gonna question whether I was ready to go. And for me now, it's like, I can't get too high with the guys' success. I get to experience that with the coaching staff and, obviously celebrate some success with the guys, but that's for them. They're the players. But really what our role is on the staff and my role is to help manage the downs. When guys are in a funk and, they're away from home and they maybe don't have a ton of wood bat experience and it's not going their way and they're struggling. Like, that's where our coaching staff and my job comes into play is, what do we got to do? Do we need extra time in the cage? Do we need to leave them alone? Do we need to watch some video? Do we need to break something down? Do I need to move them in the batting order? Do we need to joke around before the game? Do I need to leave them alone? All those kind of things, those decisions, you never know whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. So you always try and do the best for the player. You give them options and opportunity. And really, that's what my job ends up being is managing the downs and keeping the guys from getting too low if things aren't going our way. And, we're in a tough swing. You lose 3 or 4 or 4 or 5, and it's not good. How do we manage that and not let that spiral out of control? And then on the other side of it is making sure we ride the wave when we're rolling and not get in the way of the ship when it's steaming full boat ahead. So that's what I love, man. That's this sport for me now as a manager at this level. I love the competition of this level, college guys with dreams and aspirations still. And, whether they're going to get a chance to play pro baseball or not, if we can be some way, shape, or form part of that journey and help them along the way, that's honestly, that's a feather in our cap, and we're proud to be a part of it.
When you left Jamestown, you played a little professional ball yourself. You were back up in Canada. Tell me that story real quick. And then I want to know how you got, did you want to start coaching after then? How did you get into coaching?
Well, yeah. So I ended up playing in the Northern League. I got 3 games. So I got the smallest cup of coffee there is almost. I was already a college head coach. So I came back from the island. I was coaching in this league back then, 05, 06, 07, 08, 09. I was still in the dub. So I'd come back in the summer after college season and be involved. And I was coaching actually with a couple friends, a high performance, high school 18U team. but I still had a bug in my butt to play, man. And there was three of us on that coaching staff. We didn't need all three of us. You know, it was a really good staff, but you know, we didn't need all of us there. You know, there's only so much you can do, right? And I had a couple friends that were playing, and at that time Krause was in the league, and a good buddy of mine here in from Edmonton was playing for Edmonton. And I'm like, man, I'm not done playing. So I started playing in the dub again. So I ended up playing and got an opportunity with the Schaumburg Flyers. They needed a couple guys that had some injury issues and DL stuff. And they're coming to Edmonton. They weren't able to satisfy their roster requirements before they got here. And so they were looking on the waiver wire. And actually, my buddy had just got released by Edmonton. So they signed him. And they basically asked him, do you know anybody else? And he's like, yeah, my buddy Jordan, he can play. So I got my opportunity that way, man. So I got three games. I got two hits, hit about like a $1.43. I think it was like 2 for 13 or something, okay. But thankfully I muscled the ball through the infield on about 19 hops and got a hit. And, it was a great experience, man. It was a dream come true.
You said a really was, small cup of coffee, but it's still a cup of coffee.
Yeah. You know, I've got the first hit ball. I gave that to my mom after my parents were there and for the game. A couple of my friends were there. You know, the journey, man, like, you know, I wanted to play pro baseball and, you know, probably wasn't good enough to do it really. You know, you got as close as you can before you're like, yeah, man, you're probably not going to be good enough. And yeah, I got an opportunity. And I'm grateful for that, man. It was awesome. Really thankful for my buddy, and that's a lifelong friendship, man. That's my oldest friend. We've been friends since we were 12, and this was like 2006. So we're still buddies now. So in 1991, 92, we became friends, and we're still friends to this day.
That's awesome.
He's a brother. So really cool. And dude, I got a great story for you. You'll like this because you're a catcher. So my first at-bat coming up, I'm hitting in the seven-hole game one. The bases are loaded. There's one out. It's an independent league team, and they're traveling, right? So the clubby and all the equipment, it's not like the big leagues. Like, they don't have 19 pairs of everything, right? So I'm on the bench. I'm the new guy. Like, I don't get at my own shit, really. And so there's a helmet issue. So I'm in the hole. And I'm prepared. Like, I've been waiting my whole life for this. It's not like I'm running around. Like, my batting gloves were on as soon as I came in the dugout. The bases were loaded. So I was ready to go, like, way before my spot came up. So I'm in the hole. I got my batting gloves on. I'm looking in the helmet rack for a helmet. And this is the pro game, so it's one flap. It's not the double flap, college style. And so I'm looking through the helmet rack. There's only right flap helmet. I'm a left-handed hitter.
Yep, yep.
So I'm like, this is going to be an issue, man. And time is ticking. So there's an at-bat happening. There's a guy on deck. I'm in the hole. I've got a little bit of time. But, okay, well, that guy makes an out or gets on base. I don't know. I can't remember what happened. I was preoccupied because I didn't have a helmet.
Yep.
Now I'm on deck. I don't have a helmet. I'm on deck. There's two left-handed hitters on this team. One of them was on base. The other guy, yeah, the guy's hitting and the guy's on base. And I'm the new guy. Like, I don't know anybody on this team. I asked the clubby, I'm like, dude, like, help me out. So he's busting back into the clubhouse trying to find it. Comes back, like, I got nothing. So I'm like on deck and I'm still at the top of the steps of the dugout. And I'm like, you know, what do I do, man? Like, shit. And so, right, I looked down on the bench, and it just so happened that the catcher's gear was sitting there.
I grabbed
the catcher's scully. I went on deck with the scully, and now I'm hitting. I'm walking up to the plate. My first professional at bat in my hometown, I played in Edmonton. I'm walking up to bat with the catcher's scully, like Dave Winfield, in my first professional at bat. And the catcher, with his mask on and his crouch, is laughing his ass off. And I'm trying to get focused. Like, dude, I want to have a good at bat here. I'm kind of a focused guy. I'm not the type of guy that's cracking jokes and stepping in the box and ripping off old doubles. Like, I'm pretty intense and focused about what's going on. And everybody, this dude's laughing, so I'm kind of laughing. I'm like, oh my goodness. So I take my at bat. I can't remember what I did. I made a note my first at bat anyway. And so I run out to play third base. And as I get out there, it's a four-man umpiring crew, and the guy on third base, you know, he kind of came in from the line. As I get out to my spot to, you know, do the infield throws in between innings, and he's like, "Hey, you're not going to be doing that again, are you?" And I'm like, "No, sir." So, pretty cool story, dude. Like, if that's all I ever got out of that story, what a great story that I could tell people that I hit at the pro level with the catcher Scully in 2006 when that's unheard of. Like, it was outlawed. You weren't allowed to do that anymore.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think that was outlawed at the time, but I mean, you had to do what you had to do. You couldn't hit the other way. That would have just made you look silly.
Exactly. Like, which is sillier, me trying to pull off the Scully or me having the flap on the wrong side? I'm like, no. I'll pull myself from this game before I hit with like the righty flap helmet. That's ludicrous.
I was waiting for you to say that you put on the other one, the other flap, hit from the right side, and then you like drag bunt it, or you give a nice little push bunt or something. That's what I was I thought you were gonna say.
Dude, man, if I was smart enough to think that quickly on my feet, that would have been even better.
A little push, you know, to second base.
Never taken a right-handed bat since I was 12, and then I go up in my first pro at bat with a righty flap helmet, being like, "Oh, I guess I'm in right-handed here," and then put down a beauty push bunt for a baby.
my first professional at bat from the right side of the plate. Good times. So Edmonton prospects. I was going through your articles, which are all over the internets. I'm looking at this, the development camps. Do you use these camps as a feeder to recruit for the prospects team?
Maybe in an indirect way, but no. That's more of a community outreach and providing access to our players and our players' expertise and skill set for young kids in the community. So it's just an opportunity for us to run, you know, a 2-hour camp 4 days in a row for two different age groups, where, you know, two of my outfielders are working the morning shift and two of my outfielders are working the afternoon shift, and we, you know, we outline our, and what college baseball player hasn't worked a baseball camp, right? So they know what they're doing. We give them an outline. Exactly. It's like, you know what? We got 20-minute stations. You're going to have six groups. We're going to work through our outfield. Here's the 4 days. You know, by day four, we're doing different things, attacks, you know, drop steps, all these kind of things. And just have our guys kind of teach the sport to the young kids around here. So that's what our kids camp is. As far as like an ID camp, I'm from here. You know, I have a feel for what's going on at the high school level. You kind of pay attention to what some of the top guys around this area are doing, and you keep the database, man. My spreadsheet's quite a few players thick. We don't get all the players from this area. You know, there's the other teams in our league that end up recruiting guys out of our backyard, and not that we're not in on them. You know, so we get some of them, we don't get some of them. And vice versa. There's some guys that we get from other areas in our league that, you know, they're going to play for us instead of their hometown type thing. It's a small community in that way, and there's a lot of baseball development happening at the high school level. So kids from Edmonton are scattered across the province in high school. Like, they'll leave home and go to these other programs. So it's competitive. The recruiting aspect is competitive, man. So ideally, I'd love to have our team be 100% from Edmonton, all local, 90%, 80%. I'd love that. Probably talent-wise, I'd say we could probably survive 70, 80% and bring in a few imports to mix in. There's a lot of talent up here. If we were able to retain all the players from here, you know, we probably need a few more arms, and then maybe another hitter or two to sprinkle into the mix, and we'd be as competitive as anybody. So You know, it selfishly, that's a, like that. That's an idea and a goal. You know, could we ever make that happen? You know, realistically, there's so many moving parts. You know, you may have like three shortstops from this area that are all good. All three of them aren't going to play here because somebody's not going to get to play much, right? So
yeah.
That's kind of the competitive part of recruiting. And, you know, I've got a lot of contacts now. I've been involved in college baseball since 1999 as a player in Canada, then went down to Jamestown and then recruited. And I've been involved in this level for a long time. So, I've got a few guys down south that, I consider friends and a whole bunch of friendly programs that we always connect with, touch base. What do you got? Who you got? What are you thinking? And that goes on the experience and the kids that we do get go back home and say it was a great experience and coach wants to send more guys up here. So, I like the fact that we get guys from everywhere, dude. So in 2019, we have 2, 3, and 4 bedroom units that we house our players in. So in one of the 4 bedroom units, it was the United Nations. So we had a Japanese player, a Canadian player, an American player, and a Puerto Rican player, all in the one dorm. So that was kind of cool. That was our United Nations room.
What did you think of your Japanese player?
I love that. He's such an awesome kid, man. Katsu Takahashi. He knows the game. He played the game. He played the game the way it was meant to be played, man. He was a second baseman, not the biggest player. Real good hands. Quick hands at the plate too. You know, honestly, I think if you ask Katsu, I think sometimes the bigger velocity got him a little bit, but you can never question his compete level. Came up with some big hits for us. Dude, like the friendships he made, he barely spoke English too. Like he wasn't fluent in English at all. He made lasting friendships with a couple of guys that, you know, they don't speak any Japanese, but they were, you know, they found a way to communicate and, that's what I love about this, man. Baseball. So Katsu is awesome. Yeah, totally. You know, it's a universal language. And Katsu did a really good job for us. Super polite, like this, you know, first-class human. The year before that, we had a player from Taiwan. His name was Percy Liu. Percy did really well for us, too. The first half of the year, he was absolutely on fire. You know, I think I haven't talked to Percy since. But I think that the language barrier did affect him more so than it did Katsu, Japanese and Taiwan. You know, I think that there was a loneliness there in the second half of the year. His numbers went down. He always played hard, but I just think that, you know, if we'd have been able to have a second player, and that's kind of what my goal is now moving forward, is that if we do bring a player in, which my plan is to always bring a player from Asia over, we try and bring 2 so they have somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my plan right now. We have a player signed this summer. His name is Daiki Asomi. He's a left-handed pitcher. I'd say, you know, probably describe him as a control guy. You know, he's probably 84 to 86, which nowadays is not big-time D-Lo. But he's a four-pitch guy. Absolutely beautiful mechanics. You know, perfectionism is a thing over there. He looks the part. Really solid, smooth delivery. He's got the Katsu had the Japanese style as a hitter. This pitcher Daiki, he's got a little bit of a pause in the motion and the kick, which is cool. Provides another element to our pitching staff. And then on top of that, he's a competitor. He's a gamer. And he's got good stuff, and he spots up, and he attacks. And,
Jamie Moyer
checks off all the boxes.
Jamie Moyer made a 20-year career out of that, hitting spots, being smooth, being consistent, and throwing strikes. I mean, you don't have to be overpowering. It's nice, but if you don't throw the ball over the plate and throw strikes, it doesn't matter how hard you throw the ball.
Yep. No, exactly. Guys are going to lay off that stuff, and when they see it a ton. So it may even work in reverse, Kev. It's like, we're seeing, you know, upper 80s, low 90s all the time. All of a sudden, you've got this guy going 84, 86 and spots up 3-4 pitches. That's just as effective because now that's, you know, effectively guys have to make this huge adjustment for the velo and he's dealing you at the same time. It ends up being a weapon on your pitching staff. So you know, like we've got some guys that can come, they're going to come up here and bring it. And then, you know, Dyke's not that guy. He's not going to throw the hardest here. But what he does do, he does really well. And when you're talking about a 12 to 15 man pitching staff and you're playing 2-3 game sets against teams for different looks, a la Tampa Bay having all sorts of different arm angles in their bullpen, yep. You know, that's just it's a weapon for us in my mind, and an element that hopefully we have that other teams don't have, is they have to make an adjustment from a hard throwing righty with the curveball. Now we're going with a medium throwing left-handed pitcher that spots up four pitches, and then we go back to a power righty or a mid to upper righty that has just, you know, a huge ball sack on him and he wants to compete hard. So, you know, different looks, you know, sprinkling the recipe, right? You're trying to figure out how to be successful.
Do you ever get in on the action, grab the bat, grab the helmet, step in the box?
No, man, like these guys throw too hard for me now. The last time I was really like,
well, I saw a video of you a couple years ago that you were, I believe you were in the cage hitting.
Yeah. No, I can swing it in the cage. That's okay. The last time I was really like comfortable playing, you know, probably 32, 33 years old. I was so busy coaching youth baseball that I wouldn't play that much. But up until about 32, 33, I could kind of jump on the men's league team and perform. And then there came one summer where, you know, I was a little bit behind. I'm like, yeah, maybe, you know, I kind of lost that half step. And then, you know what, dude, like I do miss playing. Like I think about it all the time. I'm around the game. So, you know, I have a memory pop in my head about, you know, something. I absolutely love playing baseball. I play a lot of hockey, man, low impact hockey. You know, baseball tough. You're running around and bang up your body, man. Like these kids are crazy to play this sport. I move my feet in hockey. You know, we play for an hour and a half. It's pretty high intensity, but you know, there's no, you know, you're gliding. I mean, I'm pumping the legs as hard as I can. Like we play with some competitive guys. Like we'll get a workout in. There's no doubt about that. But you know, there's no contact. Like you don't really have to worry anything. So that's why I say it's low impact. Been good for my body. Now, when I was playing, man, I mean, it was just like riding a bike, dude. Like get back in there and play. So, yeah, I take ground balls with the guys in the summer, and I'll take BP once in a while with the guys. I still love it. I still love hitting baseballs. I'll do a little bit of tee work, but I'm pretty busy with lessons, so I don't carve out a ton of time for that. I like getting in the weight room. I'd rather spend that hour and a half kind of taking care of my body that way versus taking a bunch of hacks. But I'll do drills with the guys. You know, I'll jump on the tee when I have a little downtime. But I do a lot of the footwork drills with the guys. I show them the speed ladder. You know, we'll work through our hands, progressions as infielders and outfielders, our defensive stuff. And I stay active that way. I play a lot of catch, throw a lot of BP. So I'm probably not that far off. You know, the mindset of having a successful at bat is something that you can't just jump on the field and do. For me, it takes a couple of at bats to like quiet the mind and just go back to that routine that I had found success with. I'm just slowing the game down and just having that good positive self-talk versus, you know, I know what could be going through kids' heads and what goes through my head. Oh, okay, get your back elbow here, get your front knee here, get this, get that, get your hand up, down a bit. Oh, and now the pitch is by you. You know, when your brain's thinking too much when you're trying to hit, it's not a recipe for success.
Yes,
which I think provides me a great opportunity to relate to these players and pass that knowledge on. Is we work hard away from the live reps, so that we can quiet the mind and just execute our game plan when it's time. So we try and get all that thinking done in the off season and get out there and make your pitch to pitch adjustments, but keep the positive self-talk going. Know what your plan is, you know, hit through the inside half of the ball and run your butt off.
As a coach, what do you think you've learned? You know, you've been coaching 12 years. I think you said, what have you learned from yourself on how to be a coach?
Oh, dude, yeah. I mean, I've been coaching since 05, so we're getting up to 15, 16 years, 17 years now. You know, I was probably too attached emotionally when I was younger, reactionary, fiery, which I'm always going to have some fire in there. You know, I'm going to react to things, but I've matured as everyone does as they get older, but not even just that, just matured in how I process the information of what's just happened and what my reaction to it is. The wisdom, you know, try to view it from a wisdom, you know, how is this good? How is this bad? What really happened? What do I need to do for our ball club to have success? What's my reaction need to be? What is my actual reaction? Because sometimes my reaction isn't what my team needs to see. So I need to temper that and try not to let the selfishness part of me take over and keep that buried and do what's right for the ball club, not what's right for me. And just be a level of awareness of what's going on. And then another thing, Kev, is how I deal with umpires and the relationship. You know, I've said this for a while, like it wasn't like this when I was younger, but we're working together here. You know, they have a job to do. We have a job to do. We're doing our job separately within the construct of the same job. It's a game. It's a production. It's entertainment for the fans. We're working together, and I'm not trying to be adversarial anymore. You know, when I was younger, I'd be adversarial. And it's funny because I'm really not like that with guys. Whether I might feel it inside, I'm not going to act on that feeling. You know, when I'm talking to an umpire, you know, they'll be adversarial right off the hop. And I'm like, chill out, dude. I'm just coming to talk. I really am interested in how you saw the play, whether we agree or not. Yes. And I'm guessing we're not going to agree because I came out to ask you about it. But I'm just trying to get some clarification. It's not, you don't have to expect me to fly off the handle. And these are guys that don't know me necessarily, but I don't have this reputation, like, you know, be where I'm coming out, but just how umpires are. And then it's not their fault. You know, they've probably been accosted and you know, attacked by other guys at times. So they get all defensive right off the hop. And I'm like, chill out. You know, let's have a conversation here. I'm interested in this. This is how I saw this. And like, let's have a talk. And okay, you know, go back to the dugout. So that for me has definitely changed. Having said that, I got tossed in 2019 and was a real dick about it. But, you know, that was a one-off type thing. But
every once in a while, you got to have a Lou Piniella moment.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is a balk call that I didn't agree with, that I felt like their first base coach basically made the decision that it was a balk, and the umpire was influenced by that, and I didn't like that, and it became a thing. And you can fill in the blanks after that, but you know, I want to work with the guys, like, honestly, like, yeah, you know, it's not easy. I know it's not an easy job, and I know you're not going to be right all the time, and neither am I.
Yes.
I'm going to call a stolen base, and he's going to get thrown out, and it's going to be dumb, and you're going to feel stupid for doing it, but it's going to happen. So as long as we can understand each other, I'm cool, and as long as the game's fair, and I've never not had that happen. You know, whether I like the call or not, I've never felt a guy, you know, trying to screw us over recently. That has happened. That actually happened in Moses Lake at Bend. There was an umpire that pushed me, dude. I got pushed by an umpire in Bend. This is a crazy story. So we took our JUCO team. Like, we played JUCOs with BIU. We were down playing Bend, and this umpire was, like, every close play at second, we were out, they were safe. You know, automatic double play got called on us, like, three times as an offense. I'm like, give me a break, man. Like, we're Canadian. We're not evil. You know, like, just call the game fair, man. We spend a lot of money to come down here and compete, and you're being a real numbnuts about this. And then we got into it a little bit, and you know, I got up into his face, you know, close, you know, nothing aggressive at all, like, just arguing, like, everybody's seen happen. He pushed me.
Wow.
And tossed me, and I was like, oh, And I'm thinking, okay, we're in the States. Like, if the police come, this isn't probably good. And I don't want my guys around that. So, you know, I'm not going to do anything. But what I did do was tell him that of all the people in this ballpark, you're going to push the Canadian coach that spent his childhood growing up in getting into hockey fights.
I don't think
you made the right decision. I don't think you made the right decision doing that. And you probably picked the wrong guy to try and do that too. And then just kind of hung out behind the dugout and was in his ear a little bit, you know, after I got tossed. So crazy. That was a crazy story, man. And the Ben coach at the time, I can't remember his name. He came up to me after and he was apologetic and apologizing. I'm like, well, I wish this were different circumstances. I wish I was a player because he'd have got it, you know, like, but water under the bridge. It was a crazy incident that I'm sure every coach has gone through a handful of those in their coaching tenure. So,
was it Coach Domit?
Crazy. I don't remember, dude. It was a young guy. I think Ben's had a couple. It was after their longtime guy was done. Didn't they have a guy there for years, and then
Donnie Lindgren was there after I had left.
Yeah.
And then I think they had another guy, and then Coach Domit came in, and he's a Moses Lake Hall of Famer, wise beyond his years of the game of baseball. His son, Ryan Domit, played for the Pirates, Twins, and Braves. Yeah. And then he passed away here, I think 3 or 4 years ago, and it was a community mourning for him. Yeah. Just an amazing guy.
Shoot.
But then after him, yeah, I don't know who's there.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Crazy story, but it was a cool experience to go down there. And that was cool for our guys. I mean, we played a lot of NWAC teams when I was at BYU.
Crave Eats, Drinks, and Nightlife is open for business. 2020 took its best swing, but Jacob and the staff are still standing and ready to serve you. From well drinks, bottle service, and a revamped food menu, they are still the best spot in downtown Spokane. Check them out on the corner of Washington and Riverside, as well as Facebook and Instagram. Crave Eats, get your crave on today. Their tradition of baseball has always been played with a wood bat, and there is no finer wood bat than that of Vulo Bat Company. They make custom wood bats in maple and ash. They will customize the weight as well as custom engraving and color scheme. Order today at www.vulobatcompany.com or find them on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Vulo Bat Company is the official bat of the Spokane Hawks baseball team. Check them out, VuloBatCompany.com.
I hold Jack Brown in Jamestown there. Jack Brown, I love playing on that field. The history behind it, the atmosphere, they've made so many improvements on that field that I can't wait to actually get back for an alumni game and play on the field. It seems to be every time I show up, there's high winds of 70 miles an hour. Last year it got rained out. You know, it rained for like 4 days straight. So one of these days I'm going to get back and actually play on that field. Tell us about Remax Field there in Edmonton.
Well, interesting situation, Kev, and not everyone knows this, but our last year in Remax Field was 2020, and we didn't get to play in it. So it's a city-owned facility. You need to have a lease or rent it. You know, we had a lease. We had a 4-year deal with the city, and I was following. I think it was like a. We kind of had a year-to-year, and when the pro team was still here, we were sharing the ballpark with an independent league team, and then they left, and then we were kind of on a year-to-year, and then you know my boss, you know, went to them, stepped up, and said, "Look, like, we need to plan for the future. We want to sell 3-year packages and whatnot, not just one off year by year." So ended up signing a 4-year deal that expired in 2019. There was an option year. I was picked up for 2020, which we didn't get to play. So we're no longer in that facility. It was awesome to play there. That's where AAA baseball was home of a AAA team when they had it here in Edmonton. I grew up watching games, AAA games. I saw A-Rod, like Kevin Brown, like whoever played in AAA. I mean, I got a chance to see them when I was younger. I don't remember all the names, but there's some big-time names, obviously, that came through here. It was awesome to be a hometown kid managing in that clubhouse and the coach's office and getting to, you know, play in front of 2,000 fans on average. And then Canada Day game, man, we'd get 6,000 people there. And just unreal, dude. Kind of like a dream come true. I mean, it was never my specific dream to manage a baseball game with fans in that stadium. But the opportunity to do what I love to do, which includes that potential to do that at home, was unreal, man. It was super special. So an awesome opportunity. However, a touch sad, we turn to the happy side that our organization is building a facility in Spruce Grove, which is a suburb of Edmonton.
Home of Greg Ross.
Home of Greg Ross, exactly. Grand Layman Greg Ross out there. We're building a facility. If you want to check it out, Edmonton Prospects Facebook page, you could jump on Twitter and kind of scroll through. There's been quite a bit of news that just came out. We just signed a partnership and an agreement with a builder to build the facility. So there's some pictures of what it would look like. Dude, if you jump on Twitter and check that out, you're going to be amazed. It's unreal.
Right now.
Yeah, it's going to be unreal, man. So the plan is for about 2,500 seats, and then some standing areas, a berm, stuff like that. There'll be a restaurant. There'll be an amphitheater attached to the ballpark for, you know, little mini concerts, stuff like that. And
it looks like it's awesome, amazing, facility.
Man. Exactly. I know. It's crazy. Hey.
When do you move into there?
We're aggressively optimistic that we'll have the ballpark up for June 22.
Okay. So are you floating around or traveling all year this year?
Yeah, basically. We've got three locations in Edmonton that we'll play majority of our home games, and then we'll pick some games up at other teams' parks and just be the home team in their park for a few games too.
I am staring at a picture right now of some fine-looking gentlemen in their jerseys. After a Hall of Fame speech, tell us about this 2004 team at the University of Jamestown.
Yeah, man. Special group. It was a team that was built years before and culminated in that experience. I mean, shit, dude, we were 45-5, and then we ended up 45-9 and went to the World Series. So, you can imagine how much fun that is when you win 16 games in a row, you lose a game, then you win 26 games in a row. So that's 32-1 in your last 33 games.
It's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, you know, a bunch of the guys that were on that team.
I know.
And that's what I mean, man. Like the history of the program, it dates back, you know, 100 years. I mean, the program was around for forever, but you know, your sophomore year, my freshman year, in Hager's second year, that's kind of when the program started on the course that it's been on since then. Is, you know, your sophomore, your junior, your senior year, you know, my freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year, we set the school record for wins in 4 consecutive years, went to a World Series. You know, what does that mean for the baseball program? You know, that means recruitment, that means prestige, that means elevation of level of play, like all those things that are attached to success came from, you know, that group, you know, really that started in your sophomore year, you know, got into some state of Washington players and, you know, indirectly led to a guy like Sam Joseph coming out and Boya Quitocho came out because of Sam Joseph came out. And like, I mean, those guys are Hall of Fame caliber players for that program and put up ridiculous numbers. And then on top of that, it's the impact that a lot of guys have made in the program once they left the program, you know, like that. You know, Boya stuck around and coached, and And, you know, I mean, I've sent guys down there. Phil Curtis is a player of mine that we hooked up to Jamestown for their second World Series opportunity. And, you know, he subsequently became a coach and is in the Calgary area and was in the WCBL with the team in Saskatchewan. And he sent a bunch of guys down. So now it's like generational players who've sent guys. Then the guys they've sent are now coaches are sending guys to Coach Hager.
Wow.
So that's kind of the evolution of that program. But that 04 team, man, we had so much fun on and off the field. I know now that that experience is unique and it's just not going to be the case for 99% of college baseball players. So I didn't realize that that was going to be something that was so special and unique. You know, I mean, I've talked to players and tried to hook guys up with schools and whatnot. And I speak about, you know, my experience. They're just not going to have that experience, and that's fine. You know, I hope they do. And that's part of why I coach youth baseball is to give them the tools to put themselves in a position to be, you know, in a group like that group was. True brothers, man. I still talk to a bunch of those guys quite a bit. You know, in your messenger chats and Facebook and funny memes and this and that.
Yeah.
So there's a bunch of us that stay in touch. Like, I'm still good friends with a lot of those guys, you know, especially the Canadians. But, you know, Timmy, my old roomie, we still stay in touch quite a bit. And, you know, Brent Krause is part of that. He stay in touch with Krause. And, you know, obviously the Canadian guys up here and Jeff White's coaching Okanagan College Baseball. And Jeff and I have, you know, we've been tight for a long time and consider him a really good friend. And it's a brotherhood, man. It truly was. And we were tight. You know that.
Oh, like, yes.
The teams were always pretty tight, and that team just took it to a new level. And the reason being is, you know, Krause and I played 4 years together. A bunch of us played 3 years together.
Yep.
You know, that's a long time to play with a bunch of guys. So you go through some ups and downs, but Scotty Dubb, yeah, Walt, you know, all those guys. Like, Walt, I played 4.5 of my 5 years. Like, I played a year of college baseball in Canada before I came down. Walt and I were teammates up here in Canada, so we only missed a semester of each other.
Okay.
So Walt's like a brother, man. And you know what? That ends up helping you. You know, the relationships we had on that team helped us win close games. And you don't necessarily know it at the time, but we would take a bullet for each other. And you know, we played hurt. We did things that good teams, great teams do for each other. And you know what? There was no egos either. We didn't care. We honestly didn't know how many games we had won in a row. That's the type of team it was. Like, I remember being like, oh, shit, that was 26 in a row. It was one game at a time with that group. It was amazing.
Well, I had a podcast number 29 was with Coach Hager, and I had that was an awesome conversation that we had. But I was going through the website looking at the records, and there is 2004 all over that whole entire record part of the website, individual year as well as career year or the full year, and for the team. And 2004, just an amazing team, everybody playing for each other. The next guy, if that guy doesn't get it, the next guy will. And that's how you win championships.
Dude, that's what it was. Dude, that is what it was. I remember there were some close games. Like, we're down 5-3 in the fifth inning, and you know, it's not really going for us, and somebody would start the chains. And like, I remember doing it. I remember being the first out of that inning, and then Krause splitting the gap for a double. You know, it didn't matter. It did not matter, man. You were 100% right. It's like, we just knew somebody was going to do it. And then it happened, and it was just like, well, that's pretty par for the course for us. You know, like, our backs were kind of against the wall, and we're down late in the game, and okay, you know, walk, beanball, split a gap, home run, double, win. You know, like,
that easy.
It's crazy. I'll tell you this. I think that I'm going to joke about this a little bit. I as a college coach and having coached for a long time, I'm going to put words in Coach Hager's mouth. Every year, every team is like its own thing. So it's like, I'm not going to compare it to having a child, but in some sense, it's like your kid. You know, you're the leader of the program. This team is a unique team. You only get one of them every year. It's a different team. Every team is its own team. And it's got a place in your memory and your heart. Treat it like a kid, even though I know it's nothing like having a son or a daughter. However, and I bet you Coach Hager won't do this till he's retired.
Uh-oh. Did I lose you?
Our beauty team.
Nope, there we
and
go.
He won't tell any of his current guys this right now. And I'll never put him on the spot in front of his players. But we all know that 2014 was his favorite.
Oh, yes. For sure. And he's had some good teams, you know, beyond that. And they've changed that playoff structure. So they've had to really battle in the regionals and or that, you know, that 9-team pod. But that 2004 team, I mean, it was probably more special for Coach Hager because of the fact that that was his first kind of recruiting.
Yeah,
guys,
it was. Know? It was his first recruiting class. Yeah, totally, man. Like, I mean, I showed up in his. You showed up in his first year as a head coach.
Second year.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
So, like, I was he a was fish brand out of water. New to the game, man. Yeah, he was brand new to the like. Not bad. I mean, he had been around. I'm not going to say that was the first ship he was steering. Yes. And you're right, man. Like, that's his first recruiting class.
Yeah.
You know,
what a way to go.
Pretty awesome that's your first run is okay. We'll win like 95% of our games and go to a World Series.
What do you remember of the World Series?
It sucked because we lost two games.
Yes.
You know, to be honest with you, and I hate to say this, I just don't think we prepared properly, like as players. Like we had reached our goal before we got there. Like our goal was to get to the World Series, and we did it. And it was like this, you know, I don't know, like a culmination of huge relief. Like we were such an underdog, man. Like Jamestown, North Dakota was going to go to war. Like, you know, like all that story of it, which, you know, we knew we were like, we're not the biggest school. It's like Jamestown, North Dakota, man. Like it's a second home for me and I love it there. You know, but we're not some big city or big program. You know what I mean? So it was like, we kind of accomplished our goal and we just didn't get it done there. Like we had chances to win games. The two games that we lost, they were like 4-2 and 5-3. I don't remember the score.
They were close games. Like, you guys battled all the way until the ninth inning. And then the second game, you guys were winning that game.
Yeah. I remember seeing you there now that you bring that up.
Yep.
And that was cool.
I was there.
You came to watch us.
Yeah.
You know what killed us, man? You know what killed our mojo?
The rain delay?
It was the first inning of the first game. We, Scotty Dubb got on base. I got on base. There was a dirt ball. Krause was up. First and second, none out. There was a dirt ball that kind of scooted away from the catcher. Scotty Dubb took off. I took off. Like, I'm following the lead runner. I'm the trail runner. He goes, I go. And I know that I need to go because they might back pick. Like, they might back throw to second. You know, if they don't think they got a shot at Scotty Dubb as a lead runner, you know, maybe the back runner was lazy and left late. And he's a potential out. So I wasn't going to let that happen. So I was full bolt. And Scotty threw the brakes on. And so I ran him off. So we're no longer first and second, none out. Now we're man on second, one out.
One out.
And I really feel that was like the only time, the first time and the only time all year that we screwed up on the bases.
Coach Hager talking about that.
He did talk about that?
He just talked about the World Series. And he thinks that he put a little bit too much pressure on you guys going into that series, and he's learned a lot from that point on of just kind of, you know, getting what needs to be done and then letting you guys play. And he thinks he put a little bit too much pressure on you guys that time.
Well, that's cool. I'm glad he said that. I never felt that as a player. I'm not going to speak for the other guys. I don't think they felt pressure from Skip. He did let us play. The reason I appreciate Skip saying that is because he's a huge part of our success. And we all take responsibility in some way for that not ending better for us. And I'm glad. I mean, that's who Coach Hager is. I mean, he's going to find some responsibility there. And if he feels that, that's cool. He did let us play. That was the amazing part about that team. Like, and we weren't the easiest group of dudes to just let do some stuff. There were some characters on that ball club, right?
Oh, there was. My roommate was one of those one of those characters.
Yeah, exactly. So, I think at the end of the day, if I were to look at it from afar and be like, for me, I hope as a coach, Coach Hager learned something. So, the subsequent teams he's had, he's been able to help them achieve where they're supposed to get. Like we felt like we underachieved, like we should have gone further once we got there. That's not what happened. For me as a current coach, it's like, I hope that has helped Coach Hager help some of his teams, achieve what they're supposed to or overachieve, and if he feels like he put pressure on us, I hope that, that's made it so that he doesn't feel like he's done that to some of his other teams that have been really special too. So that's really cool that he has that perspective. And, honestly, that's why that program has been legit for 20 plus years now.
Yeah. And it started with you guys there in the World Series. And you guys that school on the map.
Yeah, man. Obviously Coach Hager is still there doing it. He's the reason. So, whether we always get along with your college head coach or not, who knows about that. But I know guys would run through a wall for that guy. So, yeah. I know guys I played with that would do that. And I know guys that have played for him since that I know personally outside of that, because we're alumni, that would run through a wall for the guy. And that says something about Coach Hager and what he means to a program. Yeah, exactly. He's this special guy to play for. Coach Hager knows that. I've said that to him before, and I appreciate how my time ended up at Jamestown. And I told him I'm really grateful that he recruited me, man.
Yeah. I want you to plug your training facility one last time. And then I want you to plug, how do players get in touch with you for the league, for your team, and what's your pitch? I want to hear your pitch.
My pitch is do not throw me a 3-1 changeup, because I'm already thinking you're going to do that and I'm going off a gap on you. So if you don't want to play for a head coach that is going to hit a 3-1 changeup in the oppo gap because he knows you're trying to outthink him, good luck. No, dude, all jokes aside, the youth program I'm involved with is Evolution Baseball. I do some stuff with some minor baseball organizations too, but that's kind of my thing. We do all ages, man. It's been super awesome getting with kids that don't even know if they like playing baseball and learning to find ways to help convince them that they do love playing baseball. And right up into, 14, 15-year-old kids right now that have aspirations of playing college baseball, and that's a long way away for them. And my opportunity to pump their tires and tell them, this is what the work is. You keep doing the work, we'll get you to the next level. We'll get you an opportunity. So I love that. It's Evolution Baseball. You can contact me the same way, so I'll segue that into the Edmonton Prospect Baseball Organization. You can reach me at jordan@edmontonprospects.com. You throw Edmonton Prospects into Google, you'll find a bunch of info. My name is Jordan Blundell. You can check me out on Instagram, Twitter. You can send me messages on any of the social platforms. I love talking to players. It doesn't always work out to get guys, obviously. And just because it didn't work out this year doesn't mean it can't work out next year, the year after. I've recruited guys for 3 years before I've got them before, because they were really good on the phone. I like the player, and you know what? I'm going to touch base with them next year. Okay, well, okay, it's not going to work. And then year three, you know what? And I got a crazy story. Year three, I got this player way back in the day in 2009. I'd recruited him in 07 and then in 08. And he said, you know what, coach, I'm going to come play for you. It was 09. He was the league MVP that summer.
Nice.
So, yeah, man, I'm like, I just pumped it. And he was an awesome guy, too. Like, just a great dude. And he was the best player in the league. So I stayed on him for 3 years to get him. I told him in year one, I think you could be the MVP of this league, man. I love the way you play this game. You know, would he have been in 07? Probably not. It maybe took a couple of years of maturation, but had a great time. So that's a cool recruiting story there. And we recruit, I talked to NWAC teams. I talked to a couple guys. I'm friendly with a bunch of programs in the NWAC. I got a lot of respect for the NWAC. I took my Canadian team down there, and we played Edmonds and Everett and Skagit and Bend and Yakima. Like, we played all these teams, so I have a pretty good understanding of where guys are at. This is a good fit for them. You know, we're similar to the West Coast League. There may be a little bit higher profile guys in the West Coast League, but as far as talent, I don't think there's much different. So if guys are interested in maybe not playing at home down there in the state of Washington, want to see the world, get up to Canada, you know, definitely consider us. We're going to take care of our players. You're going to compete. You know, you got to earn your playing time, and you want to be the ace. You know, you got to prove it. Nobody's going to be given anything, but that's everybody says that. Everybody knows that. That's why you're a college baseball player. You love competing. So that's never an issue. So that's kind of the plug for the Edmonton prospects, man. It's a great, great area, great community. We've got a lot of support. I don't even think I'm going to need to recruit players once we get that new stadium built, dude. I'm hoping my phone and email's going to be blowing up. Guys want their guys to play here, and rightfully so. Like, that's how cool this facility is going to be. And you know what? That only lasts for so long. You got to have the infrastructure behind it, and the organization has to do things the right way. And we already do that. So you can imagine how excited I am to get the keys to a clubhouse in a facility like that.
It looks amazing. You know, it looks amazing.
It is.
And, and your players are going to appreciate it so much.
You know what? No doubt, right? And you know, when you get 2,000, 2,500, 30,000 to 3,000, 3,500 people in the ballpark, and it's going to be close, like Remax Field, it was really spacious. It was the stands were pushed back from the field. The stands at this place are like right there, like right on the field, basically. So the energy, the excitement, you're going to be looking fans in the face when you're playing the sport. So unbelievable, man. So I hope once we get that field all done that you find your way up here. I've got some things probably talk to you offline about as far as some senior men stuff and some projects we want to start with this organization once we get that new park done. And I'm thinking you're probably going to be a good guy to stay in touch with based on that alone, outside of the fact that we're buddies and alumni.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. I'm always interested in talking baseball and seeing what relationships that we can make for playing elsewhere, you know, meeting up somewhere and just playing the game. So I'm always down for that. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for your time. I'm going to take all these websites that you just said. I'm going to attach them to the show prologue.
Cool.
And if you're interested in more swings after your college season, don't go home and sit on the couch. Play. Go play. Find other places to play. Go swing and be competitive. That's the only way you're going to get noticed.
It is, and it's why you play baseball. I mean, you can train. You can train in season. I mean, you can maybe need to let the body recover a little bit after your college season. I get that. Everybody gets that. But shoot, dude, like, what are we doing if you're not playing baseball? It's an everyday game. Like, if you don't love playing baseball all the time, then we definitely are not the team for you, because this is like a little pro schedule. It's every day. It's some bus rides. If you don't like that stuff, you ain't going to like this league. But I mean, I know there's a lot of guys that absolutely love this sport that will do that grind and grind said loosely. It's not a grind, man, when you love it. So
no.
That's our program, man. You better love playing baseball if you want to come up here. And that's our league, man. Like, play the game because you love it, and we're going to try and win a championship doing it.
Outstanding.
Thanks for having me on, Lambeau, man. I appreciate it, dude. It was awesome catching up with you. I know we haven't talked in a long time. So
it's been a long time.
I'm not going to let it be that long again, man. So
sounds good. I want to get up there, and I want to see this field.
Cool.
All right, buddy. Thank you again.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, let's talk this weekend. Give me a call.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, we'll talk then.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. We'll be right back.